This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.net. You're tuned in to the Kenai Conversation. I'm Sabine Pooks. It's been almost a year since the Resilience and Security Advisory Commission first started meeting. The commission works with the borough's planning department and is brainstorming ways to make the Kenai Peninsula borough more sustainable in the face of a changing climate, from how the borough manages solid waste to the efficiency of its buildings. Today on the show, we're checking in with three members of that commission to see how this last year has been going. Lou Height represents the Northwest Borough for the commission, and she joins us in the studio today. Hi, Lou.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How are you?
Oh, very, very well.
Good. Brettwood Higman represents the Southwest Borough, and Randy Arndt is an at-large member, and they join us over Zoom. Hello, you two.
Doing good. Doing good.
Hi, Sabine.
Hello. Thanks for being here, everyone. Before we introduce any of you, I'd love to kind of break down the words in the commission's name. That's something I've been curious about from the beginning. It's called the Resilience and Security Advisory Commission, or RSAC. Hig, maybe, what does that mean? What do those words mean, and why is that the name of this commission?
Oh, it's an interesting question. I mean, I think I can get a few of the words anyway. I think resilience, I think is a pretty good word to kind of outline what it is that we do. And we're looking at the future of the borough and how, you know, what we can do to be more ready for that future in a broad sense. And you know, security is somewhat a synonym for that in that case. And we're an advisory commission in that we, one of our core functions is to provide, you know, advisory, you know, advice, I guess, to the assembly. You know, that isn't necessarily the only thing we can do. We can, you know, communicate with the public, for instance, like we are right now, but that's our core role.
How did you get started with the commission, Hig? Why don't we start with you, and can you introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah. I'm a geologist. I live down in Saldovia, and I had heard a little bit about the effort to get it formed, and had someone said, "Hey, would you consider applying for this advisory commission?" And so I thought maybe it was a way that I could be of some service, I guess. Now it's becoming more clear now that we're a year into it, what this is, but definitely as I went into it, it was just a question. I actually volunteer my time on a lot of different things, everything from, you know, some stuff that's really close to my scientific efforts, looking at geologic hazards and stuff. And also I do trail building and all kinds of things. And so volunteering is a big part of my life, and this is a volunteer commission. And I was like, well, I don't know, is this something I can do that's useful? And I think it is. And so we're still figuring that out, but that's kind of where I came from, I guess.
Yeah. And I want to talk in a little bit about kind of what you figured out about how this group works and about the identity of the group, because I think those are really interesting questions now that we are a year in. Randy, what about you? How did you get involved with the commission, and can you introduce yourself as well?
Yeah, I'm a pretty much lifetime Alaskan. We came up before the state, what became a state. And so I've lived in Homer for quite a long time. And I'm not sure exactly the moment when I saw that, but when they put out the request for people who are interested to fill out the application, I looked at it and I thought, you know, that's everything on there is me. And so I thought, well, I'm gonna run with that, because I've never been involved in government at all in any way, shape, or form. I don't take money. I don't do anything. I mean, I just don't do very much there, but I found it kind of interesting. I'm getting a little older now, and so I see things differently. I have more time to think about things. And so as far as what I do, I build extremely energy efficient houses. So I do that. I do ground source heat pumps. I build solar passive into my house. So that's pretty much what it is. Having grown up in Alaska, though, we've basically been all over the state. We've built 27 airports around the state. We built the Homer water system, the Homer sewer system, lots of the roads in Homer and stuff. And so I have a passion for here. I raised my four kids here. Of course, they all have now left, which I'm not sure what happened there. But I got involved. It's really interesting to me because I know some of the people involved in this whole thing have been involved in government things before. And so they have a better idea. I was kind of wandering aimlessly for a while till we kind of figured out where we're going. And I really like the team. I like what we're doing. I like how it's working out. And I think that, the good of the Kenai Peninsula from a variety of opinions, because we have a variety of people on here, and I think they all have pretty much the same goal. And very seldom do we have any issues, but I think we all kind of moving in the same direction, which is, I think, is a terrific thing. And trying to keep communities involved and trying to make the communities aware. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do. And Sig was talking about it, having the meetings and talking about the things and trying to make the communities aware of their role in helping develop this too. So,
thank you. Lou, what about you? You're a little bit newer to the commission, are you not?
Yes, I am. I came in a few months ago when the person who had been in the seat that I occupy decided to resign. And it was presented to me at I'm a board member of the Soil and Water
Conservation District.
Yes, mm-hmm. And at one of the meetings, it was presented to me as something that maybe I ought to do. Yeah. And I thought about it for a few weeks, and then I submitted an application. And in a move that surprised me, they said, "Sure, come on board." I'm one of those people who always says, "Nah, they won't want me," but in fact, they did.
Hey, if you set your expectations low, you'll always be delightfully surprised.
Absolutely. My husband Steve Dahl and I have been interested in sustainability and survivability for years and years. We have a small farm. We raise what I wish we could call organic produce and chickens, but we're not big enough to afford the organic certification yet. I just learned that there is a workaround for that, which I'm exploring right now. And we want to see people in our community having enough food and enough farmland to sustain themselves, because we are out at the whiplash end of the distribution chain. And right now, I just read an article in Reuters News this morning that the big people in agriculture worldwide are expecting a major food crisis this coming year because of the problems with the distribution chain and the climate change and energy prices and a whole mess of other things. If you have access to Reuters.com, you might want to look it up.
And so that's where that word resilience comes in too, right? As being locally resilient in that way?
Absolutely. That's the part that really interests me most. I'm on the agricultural committee, which has been kind of groping to get its direction. One thing that we're doing is working with Marcus Miller to establish agricultural policy for the borough. And one of the things that I need to do relatively soon is figure out just what the borough can do. There are things that I would love to see personally, like food storage and things like that, that are probably not really within the purview of the borough. There's land use, and land use is a very dicey subject around here, because most places manage land use with zoning, and the Z word is a cuss word. It's, after all, Z-O-N-E is a four-letter word.
True.
So we have to be a little careful what we propose and what we talk about, but we want to preserve farmland. We want to make it easy for people who come up here to get into farming. Sometimes there's overlap, like the Agricultural Committee and the solid waste part of the committee mm-hmm. are interested in keeping the landfill open. And I have had so many conversations on that subject, not filling up the landfill, on both this commission and Soil and Water, that I kind of forget who said what about what. Mm. But it's a big problem because landfills are expensive. They use land that could be used for other things. They're ecologically difficult. And we will always have waste.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned the subcommittee, and there are a couple subcommittees, and you're each on a different subcommittee. And I do want to talk about that in a little bit. But first, just going back to kind of the origins of this commission, my understanding is it was started in part with kind of that some young people were kind of the catalyst for this group, and that there was kind of, you know, there was testimony at a borough meeting, and folks came out kind of in a group and wanted this to kind of come together. Do you have a lot of young people contributing? Is there a lot of public input that you guys get as a commission? How does the group interface with the public? I don't know who wants to. Pig, maybe you want to take
it? I can start out anyway. I think so. As far as formally, like, easy, anyone can come join into our public meetings, which we have both our monthly ones. One will be tonight, and then we also have public subcommittee meetings that are a little bit irregular, but they happen. And some people do definitely jump in there. We also do have two youth seats on the commission that are currently filled, and they're non-voting seats. I'd say overall, it would be great to see more engagement from the public. I think we get some definitely, but it's not a tremendous amount. And I don't know. I think maybe one thing, just as far as understanding what we do, is, yeah, we are ultimately just a bunch of volunteers, right? And so if anyone else out there wants to see some of this stuff progress, I mean, it just takes, you know, the time to, you know, put it in, there's no formal process you have to go through in order to show up at a meeting and contribute. And if you're ready to make contributions, we'd all welcome it. So absolutely would love to see more engagement from the public.
So you were talking before a little bit about the identity of the group, and as this group kind of comes into itself, what you're realizing about what it can do, kind of what it has the potential to do, and how it interfaces with the borough. You know, a year in, how would you characterize this group, and how has kind of the intent of the group maybe changed since the beginning? Randy, do you have any kind of thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think most of us, when we first got in here, we looked around and looked at each other and then said, now what? And I felt that there was not a lot of direction given to us. So we kind of self-defined, I think, more than anything else. And we picked a couple of leaders with Scott and Higgin, and they've done a real good job of kind of helping as we form this. And then we come across little things of the resolutions and the things that we're passing on to the borough. We're having to self-define those as they go along. And the boroughs had a liaison that they bring to our meetings. So somebody off the assembly, I guess it would be off the assembly, has shown up. And I think we're a long ways from where we were a year ago. And it sounds like that took a really long time, but it does, because part of our problem is we try to do things through Zoom, which is a computer and bits and O's, and it's very impersonal. And we've only had, what is it, one SIG or more than that meetings where we actually sat down together in the borough assembly. Yeah, just one where we actually got to meet each other. And that's a key part of anything. If you're talking about a community, but you never have community, I would say we've done really well for that, having been where we are. But I look forward to the meetings, because I think that the human interaction is important, and the nuances that are there, and when we disagree, but not very often, those things are all very important within the whole thing. So yeah, I think we've come a long ways. I feel much more comfortable now. I just was re-chosen, so I was a 1 year now, and I'm here for now 3. So we'll see how it goes. I'm happy with it. I'm actually really enjoying it. So.
Lou, how has the group kind of met or not met the expectations you had going in?
Well, I knew it was a new group, so I knew that there was going to be a lot of groping and bumping into big soft shapes in the dark. but as I've been here for about 6 months now, I see lines of interest forming. And you know, we have, 8 or 10 people, and we could be going in 8 or 10 different directions, but I see us beginning to coalesce around 3 or 4 issues that are important.
Are those the issues of the subcommittees, you'd say?
To a degree, yes.
So We do. So I do want to talk about the subcommittees. And the subcommittees that you guys have are the Building Efficiency Subcommittee, the Solid Waste Subcommittee, and the Agricultural Subcommittee. And you're all on one of those. So we can talk about all of those a little bit more in detail. Maybe we can start with Building Efficiency. And Hig, that's your subcommittee. But Randy, it sounds like that's also an area that you know a lot about and are working on in, a lot in your professional life. So for someone who has never thought about building efficiency, Hig, why does the borough need to make its buildings more efficient? And how are we doing in that department at the moment?
We've had a number of really interesting meetings with people, both in the borough, borough staff, and also the school district, who are the folks who are responsible for operations of the facilities. They do the kind of improvements and stuff, which has been, so I'm of the subcommittee. I don't have Randy's background. He's actually not on our building subcommittee, but we have a couple other folks who have a lot of experience with buildings and building systems. I'm much more new to that. So it's been really an education for me. And one of the things that, I guess one of the things we've heard a lot from those folks who are responsible for that is they are always stretched super thin. Like, you know, that it's, and when you're looking at how are you going to allocate resources within an organization, it's kind of easy to be like, well, no one's really talking about that roof that needs replacing. Let's set that aside for now. You know, we should work on that at some point, but maybe not right now. And instead do other things. And so that is, that seems to be a really pervasive issue. And I feel like, you know, we are not here to do their job. They're much better at it. And they know what it is, but maybe we can add a little bit of capacity there and also kind of think a little bit more broadly, about the issue of building efficiency and how this connects to everything, I guess, is that, you know, a lot of how we operate is this infrastructure we have that includes all these buildings. And so if you're thinking from a resilience perspective, you're thinking about like, okay, in 10, 20 years, you know, where are we going to be as far as having the infrastructure to do the stuff that's necessary for, you know, educate our kids, whatever we might be talking about that's necessary. So, and so really is important that we put some effort in there. And I think that the commission has a role to play there by both, being an interface between kind of the nitty gritty, like people who are on the ground dealing with these issues and the general public and kind of helping explain why it is that we do actually need to invest in this piece of our infrastructure. And also in having the capacity to step back a little bit and say, well, is there anything, any big opportunities we're missing because those day-to-day pressures are just, you know, overwhelming all of the capacity we have to deal with these issues.
Well, it's a really interesting point. And I was reading a little bit about when you guys got started as a commission, and that seemed like a very deliberate part of why you formed, is that there are folks in the borough working on the day-to-day on things, and they maybe don't always have the time to zoom out and have this kind of bird's eye view. And it sounds like what you're saying too is when we're talking about building efficiency, there's a lot of overlap with that kind of deferred maintenance piece in the school district, which I know has been a big topic of conversation for a while. I mean, how urgent would you say is the need to build more efficient buildings in the school district and in the borough at large?
Yeah, I guess there's two pieces. That one is that it's not so much urgency, it's opportunity. Like, I mean, there are things that we could invest our money in that money would pay back really quite quickly. And we don't necessarily even know what all of those are. And that's one of the limitations there, but we do know what some of them are. And we also know how to get to the point where we would be able to identify more of them. And one of the things I've learned a lot about listening to people who are really facility experts is they talk a lot about ventilation systems. And like, there are changes in technology that have happened recently that are these really silly little things, like, okay, instead of having a fan that just blows against something that then closes, you have a fan that goes more or less, you know, but it's a cheap thing to do and it pays off right away. But it does take that, you know, that someone has to have time to do that. Someone has to know to do that and so on. So there's opportunity there basically for the borough to invest its money and get a return on that right away. You know, and as far as urgency, well, if we look within, you know, our immediate, you know, our immediate concerns, there are things that I think the folks who are dealing with this would argue are quite urgent, that there are problems that are, that, you know, they could become critical at any time. And when they become critical, then that's what takes up all their time, right? And they can't do the more practical day-to-day things. And there's also an, you know, this is also part of our general environmental impact. Climate change is something that I think is very urgent. And I know that that's something that, that people have varying views on, but I do think we have a responsibility to treat the waste of energy as an urgent issue and something that we can work on, you know, right now.
Randy, this is something that sounds like you think a lot about. What are some ways that the borough can make its buildings more efficient? You know, some kind of concrete ways.
Well, I think there's several parts to that. One is when we do retrofits, that we deal with some things like Haig was mentioning, the air circulation systems and recovering the energy, providing fresh air within buildings. We all know that the tighter the building you make, the less fresh air you have. And it's kind of hilarious in Alaska, where you think of nothing but fresh air and glaciers and oceans. But we also have energy issues, so we make our buildings extremely tight, and then the air doesn't exchange. And so the air, even within what I build, a big part of the whole process is that ability to exchange the air and get fresh air. And when you're taking, say, a school where you have literally hundreds and sometimes thousands of people breathing that air, it's extremely important. And there's a huge amount of energy involved in that too. And so if you vent it without doing what's called a HRV, which is a heat recovery ventilator, you've got all that energy being built up. And then if you just dump it, that's gone, instead of being reused in certain ways. And so they're constantly moving forward too with new systems that are more efficient, whether it be windows, whether it be walls, whatever it is. And so it seems almost like it's, and some of us quit these things for different reasons. I like the idea of a return on investment because it's smart. It saves the borough money. That money now goes somewhere else, as opposed to spending money to heat a room or whatever it is that's just going to go out. See, if you take a room that's square and you take that air and the building is leaky, you just, every time it leaks, you reheat that air, and it doesn't make sense. And so there's just a lot of those things. Some of these things were built in the 70s. Some of the schools I went to here are still here. They're still using them. I was in third grade when Paul Banks came online, you know. And so there's just a lot of that stuff that just needs to be thought out. And architects and engineers, they come at it different, but sometimes somebody from the outside needs a little bit of feedback. And I think that's what they're trying to do with that committee, is provide some criteria that will, in the long term, you know, the long, long term, 30 years down the road, provide a home. That's what I do with my houses, and I don't mean to go over there, but that's the concept of 50 years down the road, my house is still going to perform, and maybe even at the standard that's normal then. But that's what we can start doing with some of these things. And they're not all spending more money. It's sometimes it's just being smarter about it and doing it for the right reasons.
So having identified these needs, and maybe even identifying kind of specific needs within the borough for more building efficiency, What is kind of the commission's role here? Like, once you've identified these problems, what goes next? Yeah. What's the action that comes next?
That's one of the things we've been, you know, figuring out over the last year. But I what we've done specifically on building efficiency, one of our main efforts there has been to work on assembling a database of structures in the borough. And that's a database that ultimately could include commercial structures and stuff. But right now it's borough-owned buildings and including the school district buildings, which are actually owned by the borough. We're amassing a bunch of information about that. This is basically to get that kind of high-level view, like where is it that we're really sinking a lot of our resources in? And the process that we see that, you know, and we're kind of at that point of like, we're getting close on the database, but it still needs more work. Where we see that going is once we have that database assembled and we've gone through a process of really using that as a tool to identify some of the big opportunities out there, what we'll do is we'll prepare like our kind of standard process, which we're figuring out here, would be to prepare like a memo, essentially like an analysis that would be for the assembly. And then we would also have a resolution that kind of it's kind of like an overview of that, kind of the bullet points of that analysis. We would vote as a group on that that resolution. If that passes, then it's advanced advanced to the assembly. And it might be, we might even go and present in person so that we could actually explain, you know, answer any questions and such that the assembly has there. And so that gives us a process by which we can kind of convey the results of our work to the assembly. And I think, I mean, at some level, you know, it's just, we're just a bunch of volunteers. We're just doing, you know, we're just doing whatever we do with our time. That one of the things that the actual structure of this being an advisory commission provides is it gives us that platform. We can actually, you know, the assembly, there's some expectation that they'll at least listen to us a little bit. And so it gives us that chance to like, to make our case and, you know, present the results of our efforts.
Thank you. So that's one subcommittee, building efficiency. Really interesting how those kind of environmental and economic impacts kind of are linked together. And it almost, you know, you mentioned ventilation. Of course, I think of the ventilation systems buildings are installing during the pandemic to lessen the risk of you know, contracting COVID in a small space. There's a lot of tie in there. Another subcommittee that you guys have is the agriculture subcommittee. And Lou, you're on that committee. What have those conversations looked like so far?
So far, they've pretty much centered on the idea of establishing an agricultural land use policy. We're working with Marcus Muller, who's a very knowledgeable borough employee in the planning office. Kenai Peninsula has a lot of potentially good agricultural land. And there are some pieces of this land that have been designated as state agricultural lands, some that the borough owns that they'd like to see developed for farming. And Marcus has been working on that for well over a year. And, you know, how do you do this? Especially in a place where most people will say, it's my 5 acres, I'm going to do whatever I want to on it. And limiting use to agriculture is pretty much anathema to most of the population. But it can be very much encouraged to use the really good Soldotna silt loams and some of the other top quality agricultural soils. For what they are best used for. Rather than growing houses, we need to be growing cabbages. But the thing that I see that we don't have, and I'm probably going to spend a bunch of time this winter on it, is some of the statistics about what we do need. There is a hunger problem in the district. There are parts of the borough that are food deserts, and there are parts of the borough where you can get all the food you want if you've got all the money you have. This kind of thing needs to be worked on. Some of it, though, is really not within the purview of an elected body. One of the things that I personally would love to see is some kind of encouragement for food storage and food distribution within the borough. We have a lot of farmers. In fact, the Kenai Peninsula has more high tunnels per capita than any place else in the country. But once September hits, they're useless. So how do we store that produce? How do we get it out to the people who need it at a reasonable price? That's marginally a topic for an elected body, but I'm not sure how much the borough would be interested in taking that on. Land use policy, road building, a peripheral one that also involves the landfill committee. Subcommittee is what to do with all of the slash from the beetle kill. And both committees have been looking a little bit into the process of making biochar, which overlaps with agriculture very well because biochar is a really useful soil amendment. Biochar is basically powdered charcoal, and it's a good way to make your soil loose and friable, and every little lump of charcoal makes an apartment house for all those good little soil bugs that live down there and turn minerals into fertilizer for the plants. But again, it's something that we have to present to the landfill managers and to the borough as something that could be useful and avoid having to fill up the landfill with 10 million dead trees.
That's really interesting, too, talking about, presenting information. There's kind of a million different angles you could take to present some of this information to different parties to get folks interested. I mean, how do you kind of loop other farmers into this effort? Have you been in touch with other farmers about this kind of work?
Informally. Whenever I'm at a farm meeting, I'm unfortunately going to have to miss the Farm Bureau meeting this coming weekend. I think it's this weekend. But there haven't been a lot of farmers' meetings, which tend to happen in the winter because of COVID. I'm hoping that this winter we can pick back up with the Farm and Food Fridays, which is an informal way for people to get together and talk about agricultural issues with no agenda particularly, just what happens to be on your mind.
How have kind of these topics that you're talking about in this subcommittee, does that bleed into your own practice? Are you rethinking at all the way you operate your own farm or vice versa?
It's more like the way we operate our farm and the way most of the people I know operate their farms is bleeding into the thinking process.
Mm-hmm.
Our farm is really little as farms go, but it's about average for this area. And farms on the peninsula, while there are a whole lot of them, there are not very big. You're not going to have your 1,000-acre wheat fields or your 200-acre vegetable farms like you do on the East Coast. If you can manage 5 acres with the workforce that we have, and especially with the distribution system that we have, you're doing really well. So do we want to encourage more 5-acre plots in the areas that have good agricultural soil? Another thing that we have that other places don't have is water. And nobody's really discussed water use policy yet, but I'm sure it's going to come up. I know of at least 3 families that have moved up here from Colorado to find farmland because they could not find farmland with water in Colorado. It has to do with Colorado's rather arcane water laws more than anything else, but these are people who really know what they're doing. They've got money to invest. Taking a long view, probably long after I'm going to be alive, as the breadbasket in the United States dries out, and they're having real problems right now in some parts of the wheat and corn belt, we have land that could be used for that, but it's raw land, and it takes at least 5 years to make a piece of raw land productive unless you've got a bunch of money to plow into it. One of the things that I want to kind of explore myself over the winter is land tax policy and land use policy.
It seems like the structure of a group like this is really conducive to kind of thinking ahead, thinking about those kind of high-level questions and thinking into the future.
This commission seems to have been commissioned to to think out of the box.
Yeah.